Blog Talk Radio.
Man resides in the brightly lit realm he assumes to be reality. But there is, unperceived by most, a netherworld. A place just as real, but not so clearly lit. An eerie side.
Yes, it's the eerie side of life here. Good evening and welcome to Eerie House Radio, number 7 gajillion or something. We warned you, part 2. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with...
Greg Binkley, we're in this really bad movie, and Spaceship One, and we're here with the lovely and extremely intelligent, except that she keeps coming back here.
Yeah. Yes, thank you, CW here, who is the epitome of a person who just can't seem to learn their lesson when to stay away from places.
Yes. Your mother warned you about us.
And good thing for
mother
us. That...
Good morning now. Oh, dear.
Mother, uncle, cousin.
Cousin, third cousin, fifth cousin, 5 times removed.
Friend down the street. It's all.
Yep.
It's all documented.
Yeah.
We're going to continue with our stories about warning and pick up one we didn't have time for last night, unfortunately. Suspense, we're going to throw it in there tonight after CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
Man, we must have really been jabbering. That's all I got to say.
Yeah. I blame myself as a poor floor director. Laying on the floor. 112 years ago, Frank Nelson was born. Know who Frank Nelson is?
Will!
Yes! Aren't we sneaky? Oh, yeah.
Yes. Jack Benny protagonist, semi-regular on Fibbergy and Molly, as well as all over the place of voiceovers on television, even appearing on some television shows, so...
Yep. Also, the Flintstones and the Jetsons. Also, Sanford and Son. Yay!
That may have been a one-offer there. That would have been interesting to see that one.
Yep. I think I remember it. And he plays his typical, like, wise guy self, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of like...
I think it's cool. I think it's always cool to find the old radio guys that end up on episodes of TV shows. I remember when Jim Jordan... Fibber McGee ended up on an episode of Chico and the Man, and he hated television, but he did it for his friendship for Jack Albertson. So he did one episode of Chico and the Man.
All right.
Wow. Wow.
Some of those shows in the 70s were great, too, because there were opportunities. Some of the Little Rascals appeared in some of the shows.
Oh, okay.
Late in life. I know Stymie did. I think on Sanford and Son.
Oh, okay.
Stymie Beard. And Farina may have.
Okay.
There was there's an interesting video out there somewhere. You can find it on YouTube, I'm sure. And it shows the kids in the, like in the 50s, pretty grown up. They disappeared off the face of the earth and they brought them back together, including Farina and others. Kind of what they were up to then.
Once they grew up and got out of their our gang mode, they were basically, okay, bye-bye.
Yeah. Work a day, folks.
That's pretty much it.
Yep. Flash in the pan. Not us. We've been here 7 years. No end in sight.
And we're still flashing. Or we're still panning, one or the other. One or the other. Panning for old radio gold, which we present every weekend here.
Yep, and we've got a few good nuggets for you tonight. Fogs Bane and good old Bob in the chat. Welcome, welcome, welcome. We might as well start off with...
everywhere.
Yep. Well, we might as well start with CBS Radio Mystery Theater, shall we?
We can do that, yes, because we do have some shows tonight.
Yeah. This one's entitled Out of Sight.
Yep. And I left this one out of mind, but that's okay, you know.
Out of sight, out of mind. Hey, welcome to the king.
That particular episode written by Ian Martin, and the only really real regular in here would be Jack Grimes. Also had on a Julia Mead, Sidney Walker, and Ira Lewis. But Jack Grimes was a regular, and Ian Martin not only was a regular as an actor, but also wrote quite a few episodes also.
Yep, and this one's originally broadcast way back.
Yeah, way, way back. This is only episode number 48 coming to us from March 2nd of 1970 and 4.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents
The Ladder.
I'm E.G. Marshall. Welcome to a world of terrifying imagination, the fear you can hear. This time, a contemporary tale concerning the ill-fated flight of the first American woman astronaut, the flight of the Diana 1. A tale of three astronauts who reached Skylab only to be literally snatched into the void. But before Diana 1 ever left the ground, the aura of doom hovered around her as she stood poised on the launching pad.
This is Diana Control. We've been holding at T-minus 45 minutes while a faulty computer monitoring the loading of propellant has failed. This is a scrub. We will set back countdown to T-minus 13 hours. McDonald at Capcom. Gordon, do you read me?
I read you.
I'm sorry for the bad news. It's a scrub.
Roger.
Tell Luke I'm sorry, too. And what do I say to the doctor?
Same thing. Same for all of us on the team.
Yeah, but it's tougher on her. I mean, you know, the disappointment. First American woman into space and all.
Our Terry will manage it. Don't you worry about her. Over and out.
Roger. Only I do worry. Ships, whether they ride on air or water, just don't mix with women.
Our mystery drama, Out of Sight, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Ian Martin and stars Julia Mead. It is sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, brewers of Budweiser. I'll be back shortly with Act One. Might have been far better if the scrub on the Diana 1 had been a total. This was only another in the long series of delays that had plagued the spaceship and haunted not only the astronauts themselves, but the ground crew as well. Returning to the compound from the launching, the most concerned of all was the first of our lady astronauts.
I don't mind admitting it, but I really feel like as bursting into tears.
Who doesn't?
Well, the difference is you're a man, and I'm a woman.
No doubt of that. Although I must say, I go for you a lot more as you are now than in the spacesuit.
Down, boy. Back off, Marine.
Hey, what are you getting so sore about, Navy? You got her.
And I mean to keep her.
Yes, sir, Captain. I mean, Commander. Hey. Don't pass my digs.
Aren't we all having dinner together?
Yeah, sure thing, but I want to get me a shower and a shave first. We were up on that rocket so long, I practically grew a beard on my knees. Well, I'll see you later.
Good old Luke. I'm glad he's the third member of the team.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no. The second. I'm the third wheel, Gordon. And do you know why I wanted to burst into tears?
Yeah, like all of us. Disappointment?
No, a lot more than that. Oh, Gordon, maybe today was an omen. Maybe I should cut out right now. I've got the strongest hunch this flight is jinxed. And I'm the jinx.
Terry? Hey, Terry, where are you?
At the window, Gordon. I didn't mean to wake you.
It's okay. What's wrong, Terry?
Look, darling. The sky is filled with stars, glistening like fish in a net. Oh, hold me a minute.
Of course.
How many nights we've talked about this trip. Hope to make it together. All the long training and planning. And now it's here at last. Or almost here. I'm not going.
What?
I'm not going, Gordon.
Oh, but you've got to. You can't back out now.
Lieutenant Nettles is back up for me.
Oh, but she's not a doctor.
She's a woman. That's the important thing. I wasn't picked for this trip primarily because I'm a doctor.
But why would you cut out now?
Because I'm scared.
Oh, honey. Everybody gets buck fever. You know, I had it my first time.
This is more than buck fever.
Well, what is it, then?
It's not me I'm scared for. It's you and Luke.
Why?
Because I'm a jinx.
Nah, you're not going to start him with the superstitions like Luke.
It's more than just superstition. Oh, darling, I can't tell you, but I've been lying awake and getting the strongest ESP waves.
You were dreaming.
But I wasn't. I was wide awake.
Oh, for the love of Mike, don't do this to me.
But it's you I'm thinking of, darling. I want you safe. And I honestly, for some reason, I can't explain why. I think if I go up there
now
with
damn
you...
Damn it, Terry, I never thought you'd do this to me.
And I never thought the first woman astronaut would be such a flop. Oh, I'm so ashamed. You better answer that.
Hello? Oh, yes, sir. Did you reach Luke Strong? Good. Yes, sir, we will. Within the hour. Oh, no, I can drive. Yes, sir, we'll go straight to the hospital unit. Thank you, sir. Good news for us, too.
What is it?
Weather forecasts are for quick changing conditions that would ground us for 2 to 3 weeks until, well, unless we get off tomorrow. They've restarted the countdown, and it's go. We lift off in 7 hours. I've committed you, Terry. If you don't go, it's a total scrub. Are you with me?
You know I'm always with you, for better or for worse. Not just as a wife. Ready, willing, and able, Skipper. Astronaut Teresa Weber reporting aboard.
Pilot to Capcom. Do you read me?
Yes, Commander, we read you.
Are we still on countdown?
Yeah, Gordy. T5 and counting. Any okay with you?
All systems are go here. Check, Luke.
Everything reads good to me.
Cabin pressure is holding at 6.1 pounds.
Roger. We are T40 and counting. Looks good all the way.
Good. Keep me posted.
Roger. Over and out.
How do you feel, Terry?
Now that I'm here, great.
Hang in, lovely. You've only begun to live. What do you say, Luke?
Well, let's get it all put together. Skylab, Skylab, here we come.
That's the spirit. Let's check out the inertial guidance and the boosters again.
What do I do, Captain?
Just sit tight and get ready for the thrill of your life.
This is Diana Control. The D1 countdown is at T-minus 35 seconds and counting. All systems are reported in a go condition. Pilot, co-pilot, and Dr. Weber are ready. The Diana spacecraft umbilical is cut. We have transferred to internal power. We are counting down starting now. 13, 12, 11, 10, 9, ignition sequence starting. 5, 4, we have ignition. All engines are running. We have a liftoff.
clock is operating. We are underway.
Roger. Read you loud and clear.
We're smoothing out some now.
Now you're through Max Q.
Through Max Q and smoothing out real fine. Sky looks very dark outside. Cabin pressure is holding at 6.1, okay. Coming up on 2 minutes.
Roger. Reading you loud and clear. Pitch 25 degrees. Your flight path looks very good.
We're up on S4B stage burn, and I read it. Mark, 2 minutes.
Roger. You have 22 seconds to shut off.
Roger. Read that, Luke.
What are your reach and velocity?
25,668 feet per second.
Roger. We confirm. Coming up to burn off. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2.
There she blows.
Gentlemen, you are in orbit.
Hallelujah. We've achieved orbit.
Whee!
Skylab, here we come.
You are go for a dock.
Roger.
You'll be losing me now. I'll pass you on to Bermuda.
Roger.
I'll see you in a couple of hours. Have a happy. We'll give you a final okay on docking then.
Roger. My buddy thanks you, my wife thanks you, and I thank you. Over and out. Okay, Terry. What do you think of space flight now?
Oh, it's marvelous. Wonderful. A rocking chair. I don't know what was the matter with me.
Well, whatever it was, as long as it's gone, let's put it out of our minds. Now, this is going to be a milk run.
A what?
I'll tell you. A young man like me and a young woman like you wouldn't dig that talk. It's from World War II. But I've read about it. A milk run was like when you flew out to bomb and came back and knew old Hitler didn't have any more planes to bother you and you were just as safe as if you were taking a ride in your grandmother's electric automobile.
A piece of cake.
Yeah. But the best piece of cake we got riding with little old Diana is the middle astronaut here.
Okay, Luke. Playtime's over. Let's run a full instrument check and give Terry a chance to start working on her medical reports. If I have to put up with wearing these electrodes like Frankenstein's monster, let's at least make it worthwhile. Can you boost your signal, Hawaii? Do you read me?
Anything wrong, Gordon?
No. We just passed out of range of Hawaii. We should be picking up on Houston and Mac any moment.
It's always kind of scary, though, isn't it?
What?
Anytime the tracking stations don't overlap and you lose contact.
Oh, you get used to it. It's only for a few moments at most.
Wouldn't it be...
Wouldn't it be what, Terry?
Oh, that's just silly imagination.
No, you got me going. I want to hear what.
Well, I was just thinking, wouldn't it be awful if we did lose touch completely with Earth?
Not possible. Too many backup systems, different frequencies, emergency equipment.
Yeah, but just supposing as long as Terry brought it up, we did lose contact. What would happen then?
Well, we can still fly the ship.
But with no arrangement for splashdown, where would we fly to?
Well, we can always dock with Skylab and use their equipment. We don't need ground to make a dock.
Yeah, but if Skylab's equipment goes out...
Oh, come on now. It's just not possible, so forget it. I'm going to call in...
Diana One, this is Skycom. Do you read me?
Roger. I sure do. Loud and clear.
Good. We'll have half an hour's clear contact. During that, we'll give you coordinates for the dock.
Roger.
Now, let's synchronize our time. I'm coming up on 10:32. That's 2232. Mark when I give you wow. Wow.
Roger. I read you. Dead on the button.
A-okay. Hear this, then. In order to achieve Trent...
Mac, you read me, Mac.
What is it?
No, hold it, Terry. Let me try another frequency. Mac. Capcom, this is Pilot Webber. Do you read me? Damn, try another. Diana One to Capcom. Capcom, do you read me?
I've tracked over Bermuda, Africa. Everything's dead. Every frequency.
I can't understand it. All other systems are go. Yet we've lost contact with ground.
That means we're on our own?
Unless we turn up Australia, Hawaii, or Mac back at Houston.
And if we don't?
We head for Skylab. Is that so terrible? Certainly its radio must be working.
And if it isn't?
Now, that isn't anything I want to start thinking about right now.
Maybe we better, because...
Because what, Terry?
You don't know, Luke, about my dream.
For God's sake, there's no time for dreams. Hello? This is Diana One calling.
That isn't going to do any good, Gordon. This is what I dreamed, that we'd lose contact. I remember that... humming sound. You'll never get through it, even if we make Skylab.
That would mean that...
Thanks to me, the first woman, the Jinx, we're lost. We're lost in space.
Can you imagine being condemned to wander in space till food and oxygen gave out? Or the orbiting vehicle you made your home plunged through the friction of the atmosphere to roast you to ashes in fire and flame? The very thought of it makes my blood run cold. But perhaps you will prove to be made of sterner stuff when I return shortly with Act Two.
We'll find out. I think we can hold up.
Made
I think
of sterner so. Stuff. Yeah. What kind of stern stuff he's made of? He said he was made of sterner stuff. I can't figure out what he was made of. I was made out of ice cream and hamburgers and hot dogs. I wonder what he was made of.
Oh, hamburgers.
Tis the season.
Yeah. It is.
Throw an Impossible burger on the grill for me.
We can do that.
Hey.
We can do that.
If you head out to the Erie House, you better believe it.
Yep.
Be careful. Be careful. That car that's coming up the street. You never can tell.
That one with that scope over top of it? Wow. Okay.
Scope.
Yes, the one with the scope, the large antennae.
Yeah, I think it's a Wi-Fi collector. I'm not sure.
But that last line. We're lost in space.
I know.
Yeah,
waiting for Jonathan Harris to pipe in.
No kidding.
Million.
I'm surprised somebody didn't say. But first, go ahead, please.
No, I was just saying I was watching Billy Mumy on a YouTube video, and he says one thing. They did this one reunion where they were on Family Feud. I forget who they were going against, but it was another television family of some sorts. And I guess Jonathan Harris called up Billy Mumy, says, "You're not going to be on that ridiculous program, are you?" He says, "No, I'm not. I've got something to do." He says, "Very good, William. Very good. Neither am I. If they don't have us, they don't have anything."
That's funny.
Oh, priceless. Priceless. But the
that
first
just like
American.
Him.
Yeah, definitely with that wonderful continental accent.
Yeah. And he trained himself to have that. He was from the Bronx, and he hated that. He hated for being from, I think it was the Bronx. I don't know. One of the rougher neighborhoods.
Yeah, I think it was.
One of the burgs in New York.
The Bronx. I'm from Brooklyn. Bronx, Brooklyn. I'm from Queens. Bronx, Brooklyn, Queens.
Mm-hmm. Right. So he trained himself to speak that way, and he popped up all over the place. He was in a Twilight Zone or two. Two of them.
Yeah, he was in two of them, yeah. Showed up everyone. He was in another series. He was in another series regular after that once. I don't remember what it was, but might have even been a Saturday morning show.
Yeah, and he was a detective show he was in. Black and white. Well, it wasn't Nero Wolf, I don't think, and it wasn't.
We'll have to look that up for the next after Act Most Two there, but yeah.
But I take exception to the fact that the first American woman in space considered a jinx. Hello.
Old school.
Just like, you know, women on ships, and a spaceship is a ship, you know, just that's kind of a male type thinking there. That way they have somebody to blame if it doesn't work right, you know. It'd be the woman.
It's not what I want a woman on the ship for, but I digress.
So they're at sea, but the second they hit the dock, hi sailor, new in town.
Could be.
In any event, let us begin with part two of Out of Sight from CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
For another full orbit, the Diana 1 circled the Earth. But it seemed that all communication was irretrievably gone. On all frequencies, on all tracking stations our astronauts tried to raise, they heard only that high, oscillating hum.
Now, we've got to face it. We're clear out of touch. There's only one thing left to do. Make the dock ourselves.
Well, we've used up a critical amount of fuel attitudinizing ourselves to try to pick up Capcom signals.
I know.
Do we go for a dock this time around or wait till next orbit?
Well, we've repositioned all the way around this time. We'll never be aligned more favorably. With a tweak burn, we ought to have precise apogee and gain on her enough to lock onto target with radar.
How soon will we see the lab?
25 to 20 miles we ought to have clear.
There she is, ahead and just a little bit above us.
She's right, Gordy.
Okay, we'll intercept. We're on our own. We're going to have to chase for a while, but we're locked on by radar and fitting. On the money. Tight as an oyster. No thanks to me.
What do you mean, Gordon?
What is it, Skip?
I don't know. You remember how we began to roll and swing over the Pacific?
I thought you were maneuvering for the lock.
I was trying to, but the ship just seemed to take over. We were rolling at 36 degrees a second.
You pulled her out.
It wasn't me. Now, don't you understand? I couldn't fly her at all. We were rolling so bad and yawing, I thought we were going to lose any control and go toppling end over end.
But we didn't, thanks to you.
Not me. It felt like, well, it was just like ground or someone took over and was flying the ship. Someone else brought it into lock, not me.
So what's the difference? We came home. Shall I open up the hatch so we can get into Skylab?
We ought to secure everything here.
Oh, we're airtight. We can get that later. We've got to reach ground.
If we can't get in touch with Capcom...
Oh, I'm afraid you can't.
Huh?
You see, we have jammed it.
Oh.
How do you do? I am Drakon. I have been waiting for you.
Who's that?
I have said Drakon is my name.
Before I ask the other questions, where are you?
I am here.
Where's he hiding, Gordy? You know the setup here.
But, my dear Earthling, I am not hiding.
I ain't seen you yet.
Nor will you. I am not made like you, nor are you civilized enough to be able to imagine me.
Now, wait a minute.
Now, hold it, Luke. Mr. Drakon, if I have your name right.
The title is meaningless for me, and even the name is only an approximation in translation to your tongue. Call me, then, Drakon.
Very well. Drakon. Who are you?
I will try to simplify. I am not of your galaxy. I am of Centauri 7, a quintillion of light years from your solar system.
What's going on, Gordy?
It's the sort of thing I dreamed.
It would be easier if you had a presence, Drakon. We could talk more sensibly then.
No, I believe to the contrary. You could not conceive of me even if I could make some emanation before your eyes. No, the voice must be enough.
Well, then, what is it you want?
For you to come with me.
Supposing we refuse.
But there's no way you can. I am going to take you to Centauri 7.
A quintillion years away?
Time is a relative factor. We shall go by time warp.
But even so, I am a doctor. I must face physiological facts. I don't know what your physiology may be, but if we, Earthlings, as you call us, should pass a destination a quintillion years away, we wouldn't arrive as anything more than dust.
I have said that time is a relative factor. We must leave. Are you ready to go?
How?
The trip will be short and not unpleasant.
All those quintillions of miles?
The advantage of the fifth dimension, the time warp I mentioned.
But time is relative, as you said. Who's to say that your time won't destroy us?
How long will it take us?
In your time, you would indeed be infinitesimal dust, as the doctor maintains. In our time, a millimeter of a second, of which we have wasted quite enough. Shall we go?
Here are your quarters. We have tried to construct them in appearance and solidity as those places you live on Earth. There are two bedrooms, one for the spouses and one for the drone. There will be food. You are welcome. We wish you to live as you live on your planet.
For how long?
We must control that. You are free to do as you will in these areas.
Two bedrooms, two baths, living room, dining area, fully equipped kitchen. That's upper class New York, maybe $600-$700 a month. Furnished up to a grand. Oh, except for one thing.
And that is?
Not a window. And outside of closets and the room is only one door out of here.
Which, unfortunately, we must keep locked.
Why?
We have our own security. I think occasionally you Earthlings must have caught a glimpse of our machines. We have been observing you for some time.
Why?
For reasons of our own. Our saucers have even landed on occasions, too, as you do in your flights to the moon, for example, to pick up informative material. We have even considered gathering some of you before this, but in the areas we landed, we did not consider the specimens quite satisfactory. We do very much consider you excellent representatives of your primitive culture. We have selected you as, what is a word you use? Guinea pigs.
You mean we're going to be locked up here like in a laboratory cage?
Yes, so we can study you. Now I leave you to get adapted to your new surroundings.
I have brought the Earthlings, O Ancient One.
You did not pluck them from the planet itself.
No, Ancient One. From the atmosphere, from one of their spaceships.
Why did you pick these?
One is a female.
Our first opportunity to gather such a specimen without alerting the Earthlings. So be it. What is your wish now, Rekan?
Permission to start the test.
As you wish.
Gordon, there's nothing in the big bedroom. It's just a box with some furniture. No openings anywhere. Any luck here?
The front door doesn't have a handle, let alone a lock. The only openings are that vent up there and one on the floor on the opposite side. Air vents, obviously. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to breathe. You find anything, Luke?
You think it's okay to talk?
No, but we might as well. I'm sure we're bugged and they hear everything we say. What did you find?
Nothing. You?
Neither of us.
Except two air vents in this room. If there was some way to... You hear a kind of hiss?
Yes. And... Oh, it's getting stifling in here.
They've turned on some kind of heat.
Damn. What are they trying to do?
I've got to get this suit off. I'm sorry, Terry.
Oh, it's okay, Luke. Just forget I'm a woman.
That'll be a day for the old prowler. Now, but let's strip down. Come on.
Nobody needs to have any hang-ups. I can tell you, as a doctor, we can stay in our thermals. It's safer if they try to roast us alive.
Where's that ever-loving heat coming from?
Probably the vent at floor level.
Yes. And come on. Let's all stuff our suits against it. Maybe we can keep it out.
Good thinking, Charlie Brown.
Man, I tell you, this is no way to go. You rotten son of a gun. Come on. Fight fair and give us a chance.
Stop it, Luke.
I don't mind dying, but I want a chance to fight back.
Luke, it isn't doing any good. Don't give them the satisfaction of... Gordon?
Yes, Terry, you're right. I don't know if we're just blocking it or... Hey, wait a minute.
What is it?
He's testing to see if...
Well, they've stopped it. They stopped feeding the heat.
Thank God. I never could stand heat. I am scared witless of smothering to death or burning up in a fire.
Who isn't? You all right, Terry?
I'm okay, darling, but we've got to get out of here.
How?
I don't know. I'll leave that up to you fellows, but we've got to get away.
To where?
Anywhere but here. This is only the beginning.
The beginning of what?
The tests. Don't you see it? We're guinea pigs. And as a laboratory animal, you know what all guinea pigs have in common.
You're the doctor. You tell us what.
They're expendable. It's getting cooler. We passed the first one, but...
Oh, no.
What is it, Gordon?
Failed a vent. Can you hear it?
They're starting the Turkish bath treatment again.
It's just the opposite this time, I think. This is Operation Cold Freeze.
How can we get up to block that vent?
Luke, get on the other end of the table there and drag it over.
Roger, Skip.
Terry, bring the flight suits. That air is like dry ice.
Well, I can take this better than heat. Here, Terry, I'll help. Now what, Skip?
Oh, this is my weak spot. I can't stand cold. Both, get on table. Terry?
Yes, darling.
You get up. Luke, shoulders. I help. Then I pass flight suits to you. Block out cold air. There you go.
I'm okay. Hand me the suit.
I'm braced against the wall. Okay, Gordy.
It's all right. No need. They'd shut off the freeze. Here are the suits.
I got them.
Come on down, baby. Boy, you're something to have around. You imagine old Gordy or me getting on each other's shoulders?
Huh. I'm glad I'm of some use. Now it's the men's turn.
What do you mean?
This is only the beginning. How much more of this can we go through? One exposure or another is going to be too much for one or all of us. Let's try to get out of here.
How?
Only one way. The door. What we need is a prize of some kind. Oh, wait a minute. The table. It has metal legs. Help me turn it over, Luke.
Sure.
Yeah. There's a flange at the top and screws. Oh, now, if we just had something...
Would you believe? I just happen to have a nail file.
Oh, baby, you are the most. Come on, let's have at it. Have we got the flange far enough in between the jamp and the door this time?
This looks like it. Ready?
If we do get the door open, then what, darling?
Now, first, let's get it open. Then we'll know. You ready, Luke?
Roger.
You too, Terry. Give us all the weight you can.
I'm ready.
Then all together. Set? On the count of three.
Three lost and desperate astronauts far beyond the stars. Should they succeed in opening this door, what can they hope to find at best? Another world, and one apparently hostile to them. What infinitesimal chance do they have to return to landfall and splash down on old familiar Mother Earth? I'll return shortly with Act Three.
Warning, warning, warning! Alien approaching!
Here we are.
Hey, I did look at Jonathan Harris a little bit. He did a couple of Saturday morning shows. One was a half-hour show called Space Academy, and that was a film by Filmation. and it was 15 episodes of that, and he was on Uncle Croc's Block, an hour-long live-action animated series, television series, and produced by Filmation again, 1974 and 75. He also was on an episode, not only the two Twilight Zone episodes, but an episode of Night Gallery, and was he taught drama. It was Chuck Norris's vocal coach for many years. Norris credited Harris for teaching him how to speak by sticking his fingers in Norris's mouth. I mean, Harris was the only person in the world he would allow to do that.
Ew!
How dreadful. How dreadful.
Yeah.
So there we go.
Wow.
Oh,
really,
my.
David.
Hey, I am just here to... I am just here to inform. I am just in edumacate. Yep.
Well, we've been totally edumacated on that score. Holy cow.
Indeedy. That we have. This is a good story, though. It's more contemporary than we're used to with old-time radio.
It is. It is.
It is.
But it's nice to get an updated one from time to time. You know, we've been pulling in a lot from the 70s and lately between South Africa and some other programs. I found one recently I'd never heard of before, and I can't find any information on it, but it was a program called Midnight. It kind of had a horror host in it, and that was from the 80s. I found some episodes, but I can't find anything on the series itself. I got a lot of research to do. A couple of really cool episodes in that, too.
Ooh, maybe we could share those.
Absolutely.
Yes.
That's in the plans. Good stories, and I just I tried to find out something about it. I have to get Gar on that, too. 70's having a hard time concentrating on the computer screens, but other than that, did talk to him today. He can't wait to get back to Erie House. And
A Horrible Horror starring...
And Horrible Horror, yes. He's got another classic horrible starring Gar the Ghoul tonight.
Yep. And that'll be actually starting before we're quite done, because we got to have a little extra time to get Shu Spence in there, which we completely blew last night. I take the blame. My fault.
It's weird. I mean, it's such a short episode. I just don't know how. Well, I guess I found all those terrible signs that we got to read through yesterday.
Yep. They were great warning signs. Great warning signs.
They were. That every
they
moron
were...
would need.
Yep. Yeah. Why would you need a warning label on anything that has the word poison on it? It already has the word poison on it.
Yeah, so you should, yes. So if that's there, you probably don't need any more warnings.
Have we devolved to such a point? You gotta have warning labels on poison?
Short answer, yes.
I like the one how the rat poison can cause cancer in rats. Yeah. I think I'd want to take them out quicker than that, you know? Wait for them to get cancer or die, you know?
If he gets a little rat chemo or something, you know? He might hang
in
there.
Yeah, I mean, they could hang in there for years.
No kidding.
Ready chemo. Just a little rat clinic, you know, gets his little chemo. He'll be all right. Little fella.
Blue Cross Blue Shield for rats.
There you go.
Yeah, I bet they have better coverage than I do.
Mm.
I
don't
get
me started.
Their coverage miles.
They're
hit
on healthcare.
No kidding.
Oh my.
Anywho, let's continue and wrap up Out of Sight from CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
This is WBBM Chicago.
Welcome.
Is there any threat worse to sanity than the unknown? And yet, faced with the prospect of death by any factor of the known, which of us would not gamble and reach for the unknown as an alternative? Our three lost astronauts are no different as they struggle to open a door on what? What kind of a world lies beyond it?
She's open!
Nothing.
Well, there's nothing. Nothing outside, but...
What?
It may look like nothing, but it's solid. It might just as well be a wall.
For you, it is. For us on Centauri 7, it is our world, but not yours. Are you now satisfied?
But what do you intend to do with us?
We must finish our tests before we tell you that. Now you are weary. First, you must rest.
Terry. Terry, wake up.
Hmm? What? What's this?
Shh. Don't wake Gordy. I've got to talk to you.
What on earth?
Please. Come into my room.
Okay. Just a second till I find my shoes.
Come on.
I'm coming. What is it?
I've got to talk to you, Terry. We're all going to die here.
We don't know that.
Well, I do. And there's something I want before I do.
What are you?
You. I want you, Terry.
Luke, listen to
I'm
me.
I'm not listening to anyone anymore, just myself. Now, Gordy stole you away from me, but just for once, I'm going to steal something away from him.
Gordy is your best friend.
That's for laughs. Everything I ever wanted in life, I had to fight him for. First space flight, the commandership of this one, you, he always won.
Keep away from me.
Not this time, not this once.
You can't. I won't. I'll scream for Gordon.
You do, and you get this in your throat. If I can't have you, he never will again.
Oh, where did you get that knife?
From the table. Three of them there. Okay, Terry. Come here.
Get away from her, Luke.
Gordy.
Look out, he has a knife.
So have I. All right, Luke. You wanted to use the knife? Come on. Try it on me.
That suits me just great. You bought yourself a real Donnybrook.
Stop it! Stop it, both of you!
Stay out of this, Terry.
I won't stay out of it. And for the information of both of you, I have a knife, too. Okay, Luke. Drop yours.
Let your lousy husband get me in the back, no thanks.
Hey, stay out of this, Terry. He's had this coming a long time.
Will you listen to me, both of you? Don't you see this is just another test?
A what?
Don't you remember? We're guinea pigs. They're testing every kind of reaction in us. Luke, please. I know how you feel about me. You love me.
That's right, Terry.
But not that way. As a friend, as you love Gordon.
Love?
Yes, love. You weren't made for hate or frustration or violence any more than Gordon is. It's them, Dracon or whoever they are. They're putting it all into your heads. They want to see how far they can provoke us, how much we can stand. They're the ones we have to fight. They're the ones we can't let win.
What am I doing with a knife? Oh, God, Terry. Gordy, forgive me. I didn't know what I was doing.
Neither did I. I woke up choking with this black hatred, and I... Where did I get this?
They put them on the table. It's just as I said. Another of their tests. What's that smell?
It's coming from this lower vent. It smells like...
Bitter almonds. That's cyanide. Get away from there.
They've sealed up the door again. We've got to get out of here.
The bed... No. They're louvered doors. It'll seep through. We've got to get away entirely.
How? Even if we could get the door open again,
I thought of it when the heat was coming in before. I think the cover on that vent up there is loose. It's big enough to crawl through.
Get the other table, Luke. Drag it over.
I've got the table leg that we used on the door. Maybe I can pry it open with that.
Come on, Luke. The smell is getting heavier.
I'm with you.
Okay. Now give Terry a hand up. There you go. Now open my shoulders.
I got the table leg.
All right. I give it to her. And support her while she levers it. Okay, Terry?
Yes, I think I can. It's quite loose. I'm sure I can. Oh, look out!
Can you scramble in there?
If I can just...
Get your hands under her left foot, Luke.
Roger.
I'll get mine under the other. Now, lift. All right, Terry?
Yes. There's a duct. You can't see where it goes.
Is it big enough for all of us to get through?
Yes, but how?
You're smaller than I am, Luke. I'll give you a leg up and Terry can lift from above.
What about you?
I'll get a chair and you can haul me up from there. Come on, let's not waste any time. That smell is getting stronger. Terry?
What, Gordon?
Why are you stopping? Another turn?
No. It's a dead end.
Oh, no. Are you sure?
It's blocked in front and on both sides. Wait a minute.
What?
It's open above. Like a chimney.
How wide is it?
Oh, just a moment. It's round. About two... No, maybe 3 feet in diameter.
Any light?
No. Just as dark in here.
It's no use. We'll have to go back.
Well, we can't go back. Not to that cyanide.
Maybe they stopped pumping it in. What else can we do?
We can try what mountain climbers do.
What?
Terry?
Yes, Gordon.
Can you stand up where you are?
Yes. I think if I... Yes. I'm standing with my head in the chimney.
All right. Now listen carefully. Remember when we climbed old Baldy?
Yes. A million years ago.
Well, hang in, baby. Don't you flake out on it.
I won't. You mean that guide that showed us how to chimney climb?
Yes. Now turn towards me and put your back against the wall. Now, can you get your feet up there on the other side?
Just about. Then I brace my back and then push up, right?
Right. Then slide your feet up an inch or two and keep repeating.
Roger.
You'll have to go next, Luke. You get it?
I get the idea. But supposing that thing's 30 or 40 feet tall.
We go as far as we can, and we all fall and break our necks together.
Hold it!
What now?
It's getting wider, but I think it's another dead end.
Oh, not another chimney. I couldn't make it.
This one goes down. There's a draft and... Oh, Lord.
What?
We only had a light.
I have only one match left. I've been saving it.
It's wider. You think you could come up here?
I'll try.
Watch it, darling. You're right at the edge. Where do you suppose this could go?
Yeah, there's fresh air. Maybe outside. Let's see. Well, maybe we've gotten a break at last. That's only about a 30-degree pitch. Well, there goes the match.
But where goes the tunnel?
I'll let you know any moment. If anything happens to me, you and Luke can try going back.
Oh, no, sir. Anyone tries the roller coaster, old Luke gets to go first.
No, Luke.
Here I go. Feet first. Too bad I forgot my parachute. Geronimo!
Luke. Luke, are you all right?
I didn't break anything.
Should we come ahead?
Might as well. But you sure ain't gonna like it when you get here.
Oh, all that for nothing. Right back where we started.
At least we don't have to bother about trying the lower vent. We know where it goes to. And at least there's none of that cyanide gas.
Yeah, but now what?
Now we have finished with our external examination. I am sorry to say that the continuation of our test program may be even more unpleasant.
Now look, if you let Captain Strong and my wife go, you can...
Just a minute, old buddy. Same offer here, Drake Connor, whatever your name is. Only I stay.
I'm afraid not satisfactory. The female is essential for more reasons than one.
Why?
First of all, your physiology is quite different from the male. We will want to study that. Secondly, you are a doctor. We can use your expertise to dissect your male companions so that we may study how to work on you.
No, absolutely not. I won't lift a finger to help you.
Suppose we were to offer to let your husband go.
I'll answer that.
No, let me. Darling, I'd gladly die for you. But I couldn't kill for you.
I wouldn't expect you to. I love you.
I love you. And we both love you, Luke.
One for all, and all for one.
I guess we bought it for good this time.
But wherever we go, we stick together.
Very well, Earthlings. I will give you your wish.
You'll have to execute a turnaround. Hey, Diana One, do you read me?
I read you loud and clear. Why?
I don't know. Funny thing. I had a loco notion, we all did down here, that we lost you for a couple of seconds.
Not as far as I know.
You didn't notice a kind of a time lag?
Now hold it, Capcom. You hear him, Luke?
Max? Yeah. I don't know what he's talking about.
You, Terry?
Capcom to Diana One, do you read me?
I read you.
We registered a sort of oscillator hum during that two-second gap. How about you?
I didn't hear it. Half a sec. You pick up anything on instruments, Luke? Or hear a sort of oscillator hum?
I did. Just like in my dream. Or I think I did.
And are you sure they come? The Earth people will know nothing of our interference.
Oh, Ancient One, in their time reference, they were missing but the blink of an eye.
And the three who were here will not remember.
Can the eye of an Earthling see a bullet? Can it follow the speed of light? They will not remember.
As to the planet itself, what is your recommendation?
Observing them close at hand, particularly the female one, I have seen a capability for self-sacrifice and love.
There is some hope for them, then.
We might allow them another millennium to better themselves.
So be it. We will allow the Earthlings one final chance.
So there are no such things as flying saucers and strangers out of space. And man is the only creature to travel the roads among the stars. I wonder. Oh, well, it may not be too much longer before we find out for sure. Only a few thousand years. I'll be back shortly. A thousand years. The millennium. Perhaps the one mentioned in the Book of the Revelation, when the angel came down from heaven with a key to the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand. And he bound the devil and cast him into the pit and sealed it, so that he should deceive the nations no more. Not a bad idea. Not a bad idea at all. We could all begin with the devil in all of us. It might just be worth a try. Our cast included Julia Mead, Sidney Walker, Ira Lewis, and Jack Grimes. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown.
Hyman.
And now, a preview of our next tale.
I'm afraid I'm going to puncture that theory of yours about Hatcher being something of a time bomb ready to blow up. I'm certain that he's not dangerous.
On what do you base your findings?
Well, he's been under intense treatment and has begun to respond very rapidly. He's mild and cooperative. He's almost childlike.
I see.
I've reduced the guard to 1 8-hour shift, midnight to 8 in the morning, and at all other times he is constantly in the hands of our nurses and therapists and other personnel.
Well, you are something of a gambler, Doctor, taking that kind of a risk.
No. I don't think so.
Doctor, has it occurred to you that this entire mild convalescence may have been programmed into the mind of this man to throw you off guard?
Oh, nonsense. I know a harmless man when I see one.
To leave him unguarded is taking chances with the lives of many people. Heaven only knows what has been fed into his receptive and willing mind.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by the Kellogg Company, makers of Kellogg's Special K cereal. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre.
Macabre.
Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Time in Chicago is 11:23, temperature 63 degrees.
Thank you, Chicago.
Good for you, Chicago.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, well done. Well done, Chicagoland. Wow. I liked that one.
I even have a lesson we can learn from that one.
I can't imagine what it might be. But we'll find out. Erie House Radio proudly presents a Garless Moral of the Story.
Apologies to Gar. Like some women, some aliens are willing to give men a second chance. That's it. All I got.
Now that wasn't so bad, was it?
It was disgusting.
It was.
Or put another way. That's right.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Fun facts from good old Bob. I don't think I'm going to read that one.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
Not a fun topic.
Let's keep it PG.
Yes, let's keep it OTR.
Yeah, don't try that at home, kids. You'll get caught smuggling too. Yeah.
Yes.
CW, I saw a note here with a picture of Prince Charles in his caption, 74-year-old man excited to get his first job after living... after years of living off his mother. There you go.
That's true.
Oh, that just described about how many gamers are going to end up in that same situation. People on their Xbox and their PlayStation.
Yeah, but they're not going to be king.
Yep.
Too bad.
The best they can hope for. Level 27 in Halo or something.
Yeah, that's about as close as it gets, right? That's okay.
I like
a good game every now and again. Video games can be cool.
Yeah, I don't mind sporting life, gaming-wise.
Yep.
But, yes, food for thought. Are we really on a planet, or is this really just a lab experiment where little mice running around, going from here to there?
What are we going to do tonight, Brian?
What?
Same thing we do every night.
We're going to conquer the world.
If I'm going to be a lab rat, I'm going to be Pinky or the brain. Probably Pinky.
Narf. Narf.
Narf. Narf.
Those were great cartoons. It almost felt like Warner Brothers came back, you know? They were that good. The Animaniacs.
Was that a Steven Spielberg? I know Animaniacs was. Was that the Spielberg?
Yeah, it was also a spinoff from the Animaniacs. It was a feature on Animaniacs, okay. And they got their own show.
Ah.
Yeah, so it was out of that Spielberg. What was the one with the dog and the little girl? Mindy and what was the dog's name?
Oh,
I love you. Bye-bye.
I love you. Bye-bye.
No, it wasn't Mork.
I don't know. That's what I said. I don't know.
Oh, and don't forget Chicken Boo. Chicken Boo.
Oh, yeah. It's a giant chicken, I tell you.
It's a chicken, I tell you.
I have mentioned in the past, good old Freebie comes to us from Amazon. It is on Roku, but it also has its own app. And you can even watch it right on your computer, especially if you have an Amazon account. It's free. But recently they added not only the original five seasons of Twilight Zone, but the last series that Jordan Peele hosted. And, of course, The X-Files, all episodes of that, Space 1999, and the Dark Shadows program. They're all there for free. So is it Roku? I'm sure a Fire Stick version of it as well. There's an app if you have an Android device, and you can even just watch it right on your computer if you wish to do so that way.
Aha. Uh-huh.
I've been recently watching that Eugene Levy series. He and his son came up with Schitt's Creek. That's there as well.
Okay.
S-H-I-T-Z.
Yes.
Yes.
I know.
Dean Levy's son, I can't remember his first name, but when he won his award, his Emmy, his mother said, this is what happens when you have a boy who just went spinning around in circles all day long.
Of course, Catherine O'Hara, I mean, you got two of your Second City TV veterans in that show. It just absolutely very just amazing. Yeah,
I know. Incredible.
All the Second City TV guys are just absolutely amazing.
Love Count Floyd.
Count Floyd was fun.
Yeah, I guess that was he created that all based on kind of his Pittsburgh local host growing up. So the malfeasance of Count Floyd was from that show.
No way.
Oh, wow.
Well, let's not make the mistake we made yesterday. Let's make sure we get suspense in there. If you got to run at 8 o'clock for Gar's show, we understand, but maybe you can do both. Stick around for us. And this is called You Died Last Night. Originally broadcast.
Episode number 132, that can't be right. Anyway, oh no, yeah, whatever. It comes to us from, oh, come on, where'd it go? Let's see. Oh, there
long
it is.
Long time ago, I know that.
April 1st of 1960, and two.
No fooling.
Show number 919.
April 1. No fooling.
And now, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. In a moment, Act 1 of You Died Last Night, starring Bob Reddick and Santos Ortega, and written especially for Suspense by Robert Arthur. This portion of Suspense is brought to you by the makers of Alpine Cigarettes. What's it like to smoke an Alpine? Well, it's like many pleasant things you know. Nothing at all like the sort of smoking you may be used to. Alpine is a fresh, clear sort of smoke. If this sounds good to you, try Alpine. filter cigarette.
There's something more to smoking with an Alpine cigarette.
My name, Joe Prescott. Occupation, garage mechanic, age 34, unmarried, nobody ever heard of before. But I have a question for you. What happened to you last night? Now, don't answer, because whatever you say, you're wrong. All of you. You see, I know what happened last night, because I saw it happen. You and you and you and all of you. You died last night. All right, let's start over. And don't bother to say I'm off my rocker. I'm going to tell you what happened. And I'm going to do my best to make all of you believe it, because if you don't, all of you, I got a pretty good idea you're going to die again some night soon. So we go back 2 days, the day before yesterday, time exactly 4 p.m., place 30 miles northeast of Bakersfield, California. Characters, just me, Joe Prescott and Nellie, my pack mule. I was prospecting like I do every year for a couple of weeks for the fun of it. Only this time I'd struck something that looked big. Because I didn't have anyone else to talk to, I talked to Nellie. Nellie, old girl, looks like you'll be able to retire if this is as big as I think it is. That's right, laugh. But this time I mean it. I'm going to blow a hole in this ridge and see what's down there. A nice big hole. About 12 sticks of dynamite. I tied Nellie to a tree, and then I drilled a hole. I put in 12 sticks of dynamite. I attached a 60-second fuse and lit it. And then I heard the noise. And out of no place I saw it appear. A kind of blur above the rocks, like a spinning top. I knew I wasn't imagining it because Nellie heard it too. All right, easy, girl. Easy, easy, easy. And there it was. Sitting on the rocks where I just planted the dynamite. A spaceship. An honest-to-gosh flying saucer half as big as a house. I acted automatically, not even thinking, put my foot on the fuse and crushed out the spark. And then I looked at this thing, goggle-eyed. An opening appeared near the ground and something came out. It looked... well, it looked sort of like a fuzzy orange teddy bear, 5 feet tall. It had two eyes raised on long stalks, and those eyes looked at me. And I looked at them. And then this teddy bear spoke to me.
Hello, Joe. What do you know?
Sure, it sounds funny, but that's what this thing said to me. It's funny because there's a slang line that I use myself, and the teddy bear had just plucked it right out of my mind, along with all the other words that I knew.
Please do not be frightened, Joe. I just want some information.
I believed it. And I relaxed. The teddy bear nodded.
That's better, Joe. How about coming inside the ship with me?
I crawled inside and he followed. The lens-like opening closed and I was in... well, I suppose it was a control room. It had some dials, some screens like television screens, and a couple of overstuffed toadstools. It turned out to be sort of chairs. While I was looking around, the teddy bear started taking off his orange skin.
Easy, Joe. Don't panic. This is just a spacesuit I'm wearing. Naturally, it doesn't look like your spacesuits. I can't breathe your air. The nitrogen would poison me.
You can breathe my air, though. The nitrogen is replaced by something inert. There. Do I look any better to you?
Well, now he certainly looked more human. Though I don't guess he was. Anyway, not exactly. Out of the orange spacesuit, he looked like a 5-foot-tall old man wearing some flowing green material. He was bald, had pointed ears. He had large green eyes that seemed friendly.
Good. Now you're not afraid anymore. Incidentally... what you are thinking of is my ears are really, antennae. Like your mouths.
Antennae, huh?
Yes. Ordinarily, I could use my antennae to hear your thoughts. But your human thought pattern seems so different from ours that we'd better use speech. Now that I've picked enough words out of your mind, and why don't you call me Tony? Joe?
Mm-hmm. Sure. But Tony what?
Just Tony. Short for Thonian. That's what we call ourselves, Thonians. Just as you call yourselves humans.
So you're from outer space?
Yes. About 15 light years away. And it seems I got here just in time.
I don't get you. What do you mean, just in time?
To take the necessary steps, Joe.
Necessary steps for what?
A few hours ago, our Galactic Survey Bureau picked up radioactive waves coming from space. We located them in the solar system, and I was sent here immediately. Apparently, about 15 years ago, you humans exploded a quantity of radioactive material for the first time.
Yeah, I guess so. The first atom bomb.
That means you humans have discovered the secret of atomic energy. It won't be long before you're building spaceships and traveling to the stars.
I suppose you're right.
You see, we Thonians are rather set in our ways. We like peace and quiet. Frankly, we've had a lot of trouble with younger races who discovered atomic energy and came journeying through the universe trying to conquer everything in sight.
Yes, I can see how that might happen. They'd rather fight than be friends, huh?
Much too often. So now we just prevent trouble before it starts. I'm here to find out what the human race is like. If it doesn't measure up, I may have to take drastic action.
That's what he said. Drastic action. Meaning that if he didn't like our looks, he was going to destroy the human race before it could ever get dangerous to the Thonians.
Now, Joe, you mustn't be upset. It may not come to that. I'm here to take corrective action, yes. But I can decide whether it will be mild, severe, or drastic.
Mm-hmm. And what does mild mean?
Oh, blow up all atomic energy installations.
And what would drastic be?
That would involve turning your world into a ball of flaming gas.
That's nice.
But it's hardly ever necessary.
Oh, that's a consolation. So what is the other possibility? Severe measures.
I'd say eradicate all large cities and towns.
You mean wipe them out?
Remove them from existence.
And kill a few hundred million human beings?
Oh, more than that. Reduce the population of the world to, say, 50 million people and let them rebuild. But believe me, Joe, it would be quick and painless.
Oh, just like that, huh? Kill off most of the population and leave a few to rebuild?
Really, it's not as bad as you think. You could think of it as, what's the word I want? Pruning.
You mean like fruit trees?
Exactly. Sometimes races need pruning, too. And I'm afraid that from the Thonian viewpoint, the human race badly needs pruning. Yes, Joe. Rather badly.
There you have it. Here was Tony, a representative of a super race from the stars, come to our Earth in a super spaceship to destroy us. And what could I do about it? Nothing. I grabbed the revolver that I always carry when I'm prospecting, but Tony turned those big green eyes on me and I froze, paralyzed like a statue.
You see, Joe, you're helpless. Please accept the inevitable. It'll be better that way.
Okay, Tony. What choice do I have? Well, what now? When do the festivities start?
Festivities? Oh, you are being humorous. You mean when do I begin corrective measures?
That's right. I suppose you have ray guns, bombs, stuff like that to do your dirty work?
Joe, if only you wouldn't use words like dirty work. If you could just think of it as a necessary and helpful pruning.
Yes, well, I can't.
Let's keep it on a high plane. Suppose I say preventive measures.
Well, it does sound better, I must admit. Well, to answer your questions, I do have a store of bombs. Very small, but very efficient. I don't carry any armaments as such. My ship is very light and delicate. It's built for speed, not for fighting. But then, we Tholians haven't had to fight anyone for the last million years.
Killed off the opposition before it got started, huh?
I guess you could put it that way. Later, the other races we've dealt with have grown up to be mature and peaceable. So there are no wars. Interplanetary or otherwise.
I get the picture. I don't say I like it, but I get it.
Splendid. I'm favorably impressed by your quickness, Joe. Perhaps the human race is better than I think. But now let's start out on our tour of inspection.
Inspection?
Of your Earth. I have to make it before I decide what preventive measures to take. Mild, severe, or drastic.
Tony pushed some buttons. The walls of the spaceship became transparent, as if we were sitting in midair, and then we began to move, drifting up and away. I saw Nellie, my pack mule, raise her head and hee-haw after us. And then we were zipping over the mountains until they were only a blur under us. I began to ask Tony questions about how the ship worked, looking for an angle, anything that might help. Tony, did you say that it was only a few hours ago that your race first knew an atomic bomb had been set off on Earth?
4 hours and, let me see, 48 minutes by your time, Joe.
And you covered 15 light years in under 5 hours? How could you do that? I thought nobody could travel faster than the speed of light.
They can't, Joe. But you see, this ship travels both in space and in time.
Travels in time?
When I have a long trip to make, I start the space drive and set the automatic pilot. Then I turn the time control forward to the estimated duration of the trip. And there I am, at my destination.
Well, that way you can do a year's traveling in a second.
More or less. Time travel is a little tricky, but very convenient for long-distance travel.
Yes, plenty convenient. But can you travel backwards in time?
Yes. The process is reversible. We could go back to that instant when you first saw the ship, if we wanted to.
And would I be standing there looking at you the way I was?
No, you'd be inside the ship, because you are now. So the past would be changed. Going back backwards is a bit tricky, you see. We seldom do it.
Mm. Now, Tony.
Yes?
Let me see. If I've got this straight, back on your planet, 15 years have passed since you left?
That's correct. And 15 more will pass before I get back, Joe. You humans are intelligent and rather likable, judging from you. I do hope I won't have to take drastic measures on your world.
Drastic measures, eh? I don't know about this guy. He seems a little...
I hope you won't have to take drastic measures either.
Yeah, no kidding. Why are the aliens always after us?
Yeah, it's just like, you know, here we are just trying to blow each other up. What's their issue here?
Yeah, you know, you don't
no
need to
kidding.
Take us over. We'll take ourselves out. Thank you.
That's right. Give us enough
Thank
time.
Thank you very much.
Yep, give us enough time. We'll do ourselves in.
Right. Relax, we got this.
We got it. We do got it. Just
yep.
Leave us to our own device.
That's right.
Yeah, Facebook would be enough to get it going in that direction.
There you go.
Yeah. Woohoo.
Man, it used to be a fun place, but... It's like all of them. Sooner or later, they all go to heck. What was the one before that? MySpace? MySpace?
That's still out there, but I don't know why. You know?
Yeah. No, I don't know if anyone uses it anymore, but it's there's a ghost of itself around there somewhere.
Yeah, it is.
No kidding. Yep.
It's a ghost.
A good ghost, yeah.
Good ghost.
Did the three ghosts have names? Remember the three ghosts that always used to hassle Casper? Did they have names?
Fatso and was one of them. Who were the other two?
Oh, that's right. They did have names.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Then there was his cousin Spooky. That one I remember. He had his
Spooky
own line of
cool.
comic books. Yeah, he had his own line
cool.
of comic books.
I like those, the Harvey comics.
Yeah.
Yep, that's what I got started
Harvey
on.
Comics, yeah.
Harvey is what got me going. Then I graduated on Spider-Man and other Marvel stuff. Then I was hooked on the superheroes.
Yeah.
That's the way it was. Good stuff. But
no,
we got good stuff on radio. Another form of storytelling. You died last night.
I can't
night.
Wait to see what happens.
Me
well, you're
either.
Not going to see what happens, Dave. You got to listen.
Oh, well, forget that.
Radio, man. So it was Buttons and Mindy. I love you, Buttons. Bye bye.
Well, I learned something, but not much. We sped along, and there were the lights of the city underneath us, Los Angeles. Tony slowed down to study it. That's one of the cities I suppose you're going to have to blow up, isn't it, Tony?
Oh, I do hope I won't have to, Joe. Perhaps it can be avoided. What is that over there?
That looks like an amusement park.
An amusement park? I'd like to study that.
The ship came to a stop 100 feet in the air above a big amusement park right on the beach. Apparently we couldn't be seen, but we could see and hear everything down below perfectly. First, Tony seemed interested in the rifle range. And next, he swooped down over an open-air dance platform where a band was playing, while 100 couples danced. Well, Tony, there you are. Human beings enjoying themselves, having fun.
Having fun. Yes, your race has still the capacity to enjoy itself. We Thonians are very serious, I'm afraid.
You still think we're so bad, we humans?
Joe, I never said you were bad. But you may be dangerous. It's my job to find out. Now let us see some more of your world.
He pushed a button and the saucer leaped eastward across the continent. Beneath us, the mountains, the plains, the farmlands, forests, the lakes, and cities. Tony kept pushing buttons and I asked him what he was doing.
Why, Joe, I'm making a record. Sort of, what's your word? Yes, movie. A record of life on your world for our scientists to study.
I thought you said it was up to you to make the decision whether or not, you know, you were going to take action.
Oh, it is. This record is in case I do take action. Then, 1,000 years from now, our scientists can study these records and see if the new world you build after I finish pruning, shall we say, is better. The old one.
What could I say to that? I kept my mouth shut. Suddenly, we were over New York. Tony slowed down the ship and brought it close to the ground. For a minute, we hovered there directly over Times Square, unseen. Directly under us was the usual snarl of traffic, of people coming and going, the big electric signs flashing, the heart of the world's greatest city beating. For a couple of seconds, we just sat and listened.
What energy your people have, Joe. What vitality. To what heights your race can climb.
If you let us.
If you let yourselves. Well, we must be going on.
He pushed another button. We swept onward. And I saw the world as no man has ever seen it before. all the beauty and wonder and misery and horror of it. In England someplace, we stopped long enough to watch a parade led by a band of Highland pipers. And then on across the rest of Europe. Tony seemed to like to see human beings enjoying themselves. But we visited Berlin, too, and there we stopped a minute. We saw a man and a woman suddenly jump from a window in East Berlin over that wall that they've erected and run for safety in West Berlin. And we saw what happened. The man and woman fell and lay there where they fell. Tony pushed the button, and then we were sweeping over barren wasteland, and suddenly Tony pointed.
Joe, look. See that?
I looked, and hundreds of miles away, I saw a tremendous burst of light, followed by the most enormous mushroom-shaped cloud the world has ever known. Tony pushed a button, and suddenly we were thousands of miles out in space, looking down at the Earth spinning underneath us.
Joe, that was an atomic explosion. A tremendous one.
Yeah, I read the Russians were planning to set off another big one.
I guess that about decides it, Joe. Right up to the end, I was hoping that mild corrective measures would be enough. I like you humans. You're full of laughter and vitality, and you can be kind and generous. But you're also full of cruelty and hate. You're a puzzling race, Joe, and our scientists will study these records for a long time.
Only we'll all be dead, huh?
No, not quite all of you. I leave a few of you to rebuild, and hope they'll do a better job next time.
He pushed a switch, and down below us in 10,000 different spots, the Earth blew up. 10,000 cities and towns vanished. 10,000 times, 10,000 people were gone as if they'd never existed. And that was when it happened. Last night. When you and you and you died. I had to tell you all this so you'd understand how you died. When it was over, Tony told me he'd put me back on Earth anywhere I wanted. And that's when the idea hit me. I asked him to put me down at the exact spot that he'd pick me up. He pushed a button, and we were back there hovering over that little California valley. And then I asked Tony to satisfy my curiosity to show me how his time travel gadget worked. In fact, I asked him just for a second to take me back to the very instant at 4 o'clock the day before when I'd first seen his ship. He agreed. He turned a dial. And all of a sudden, time turned backwards. It was the day before, and none of it had happened. You were all alive. The world was just as it had been. Everything was the same. Except one thing. The first time, I had been outside the ship, and now I was inside. Everything else was exactly the same, including that 12 sticks of dynamite with the fuse sputtering. And now, the dynamite was going to go off because I wasn't outside to stamp out the fuse. And as we hovered there, it did. That explosion had ripped Tony's spaceship open, blew me out through a rip in the wall, and as I lay dazed on the ground, I saw the Thonian spaceship go spinning wildly around up into the sky and out into space, and I knew Tony must be dead, because his ship was a wreck, he'd have no air. So I'd fix things. The world was okay. We were all still alive. I'd tricked Tony. He hadn't known about the dynamite. All right, there you have it. The whole story. How you died last night and why you're still alive now. I had a broken ankle and a lot of bruises, but I rode Nellie back to town and told my story. And they laughed at me. I suppose you're laughing at me now, thinking I've made all this up just to entertain you. But you're wrong. You are wrong. Because out there in the stars is a race that doesn't think that we can be trusted. In 15 years, they'll wonder why Tony doesn't come back. They'll send someone else to find out. Just 15 years. Before then, we have got to prove they can trust us after all. We've got to act like human beings. We've got to live up to the best that's in us, not the worst. and we've only got 15 years. I only hope we can do it in time.
Suspense. You have been listening to You Died Last Night, starring Bob Reddick and Santos Ortega, and written especially for Suspense by Robert Arthur. Suspense is produced and directed by Bruno Zerato Jr. Music supervision by Ethel Huber. Sound patterns by Joseph Cabibbo. Listen again next week when we return with Let There Be Light, written by Irvin Lewis. Another tale well calculated to keep you in
suspense.
They're the most Bing Crosby and Rosemary Clooney weekdays on the CBS Radio Network.
Who knew?
Cabibbo, I always thought it was a curse. Why are you Cabibbo, you?
Yep.
I found out what was wrong here. It was a guy.
I don't know. Well, CW, did you like that one? Did we lose her?
She's there, but maybe she's not all. Well, she can't be all there. She keeps coming back, you know?
Yeah, she keeps coming to visit us. Can't be all there. Oh, there you are.
So we only have 15 years. 15 years.
That's it. Yeah, I may not have anywhere close to that.
Oh,
yeah, I mean.
Oh, dear.
Oh, come on. I'm
Why is it all aliens want to blow us up for one of two reasons? Either for peaceful means, they want to blow us up our planet for peaceful means, or to create another intergalactic highway. Yeah. One of those two reasons why they want to blow us up.
No kidding. I mean, we're either, I'm sorry, but your planet is just in the way, or you're too dangerous, you're too stupid, or just because we're bored.
Yeah, that was like Mars Attacks. I think they were bored. They were just having fun.
Okay.
They were. There was no rhyme or reason to it. They were just having a good old time. Good old
Aliens just want to have fun.
Yep.
Wow.
And so do we.
So, what's the guy saying? Game over, man. Game over.
Game over. We're done. Played out.
Yep. It could be. Could be. Well, we've got some quality time left.
Well, we have time left anyway. Quality, we'll let people like good old Bob and Fogsbane decide that. No little matter. And
yep.
Maybe we got some time for that Wheel O' Radio.
Oh, cool. Ooh.
Yeah. Wheel O' Radio.
All right,
well, CW is the queen of the wheel. We should let her give it a spin.
If you like.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. Huzzah. Here we go. We're spinning.
Around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
Stafford has been a man of mystery for the past few nights. As soon as he finishes dinner, he locks himself in his makeshift laboratory and allows nobody to enter. As the scene opens, we find him entering his little room in the basement. Listen.
That's that. Guess that'll keep those busybodies out.
Hello, Daddy.
Snooks, how did you get here? I thought you were still in the dining room.
Did you?
Yes. Now, I want to know how you got in here.
I made myself into a spitball and I rolled through the keyhole.
No, you did, eh?
Ain't I funny?
Very funny. Well, roll right out again.
Now I want to stay here with you, Daddy.
Well, all right, but if I let you stay here, You must promise not to bother me, even for a second. Promise?
Promise.
And no matter what you see in this room tonight, I want you to be as silent as a tomb.
Silent as a tomb.
Snooks, you see that big thing in the corner, covered with a sheet?
Mm-hmm. What is it?
I'm building a robot.
Huh?
I'm building a robot.
Who's going to row it, Daddy?
Not a rowboat, a robot. It's a mechanical man that talks like a human being, moves like a human being, but looks like a jumbled mess. It has no brains. Now, do you know what it is?
Mm-hmm. Uncle Louis.
No. It's an automaton. It responds only to the commands of the operator. I've been working on it secretly for the past 4 months.
Why?
Because it's a dream of mine. And if it comes true, we'll be rich. I'll never have to work again. And brother, will I tell everybody where to go.
Where?
And that doesn't matter.
I know where.
Well, never mind that. I'm just hoping this robot will work properly. But I don't want to count my chickens before they're hatched.
Can he lay eggs, too?
No, he can't lay eggs.
I want to see him.
You will in just a minute. First, I want to check my plans and see if I've overlooked anything.
Can I lift up the sheet and have a peek?
No!
Just a tiny, weeny bit of peek.
I don't want you to see it until I unveil it.
Can I feel it?
No, you can't feel it.
Well, can I smell it?
No! No peeking, no feeling, and no smelling.
Any sniffing?
Now, you stay away from that robot. I've worked on it too long to have you ruin it.
How'd you make it, Daddy?
Well, to begin with, I made a very careful study of the human anatomy.
What's that?
Have you ever seen a skeleton?
Mm-hmm. I seen one in a doctor's office.
Fine. Then you know what a skeleton is.
It's a man with his outside off and his inside sticking out.
That's close enough. Well, in order to understand the movements of the extremities, I had to read an entire chapter on syndesmology.
Syndesmology?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Joints. I spent two nights going through the joints.
Did you take Mummy?
Mummy didn't know anything about it.
Is that why she hollered?
Nobody hollered! Syndesmology is a scientific term for the study of the development of the joints and ligaments.
Oh.
I had to learn all about the joints to make the robot move properly. Then I examined the construction of the brain and the cranium.
Why?
Because the brain controls all the actions. It's made up of sections called lobes. There's the frontal, temporal, parietal, and occipital. That means the front, side, top, and back. Think you can remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what are they?
The frontal, side, top, and back.
That's better than I expected.
Better than I expected.
Anyway, to make the robot look very natural, I put in veins and arteries made of rubber to show the circulation of the blood.
What's that?
Well, you know how the bloodstream keeps moving in the body. For instance, when I stand on my head...
Stand on your head, Daddy.
No, not now. But when I stand on my head, all the blood rushes there and fills it. But when I stand up straight, the blood doesn't rush to my feet. You know why?
Because your feet ain't empty.
That's not the reason at all. It's because there's less pressure when the heart is pumping in its normal direction, I think.
I want to see the robot.
Robot.
Yeah, I want to see him.
Well, just a few seconds. I want to explain him first so you won't be completely mystified. Naturally, he's run by electricity. But I've put glass inspection windows all over his body so you can see how he works.
Mm-hmm.
He has one of those little pains on his head, one on his feet, and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Has he got a pain in his tummy?
Yes. Yeah. Snooks, I'm going to unveil him now. Step over here.
All right, Daddy.
Now, here we go. Let me get this sheet off, and you'll really be proud of your old dad. There. There's my robot.
Do you feel all right, Daddy?
I feel fine. Well, what's the matter with him?
I'm going to tell Mama you took her wash boiler.
Now, you stay here. It's the only material I have to work with.
Why is he holding that coffee pot?
That's the whole idea. That's what's going to make me rich.
How?
Well, I'm going to take him to the Maxwell House coffee people.
Yeah.
And they can use him for advertising. See, he's got the coffee pot in one hand and a cup and saucer in the other.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I press the button, he pours a cup of coffee and says, "Will you have a cup of Maxwell House coffee? It's good to the last drop."
Let me hear him say it.
Well, I haven't tested it yet. Oh. But I'm sure it'll work. You'd never believe how I made the voice, though.
I'll believe it, Daddy.
Well, I took the horn off of our car and attached it to it.
Yeah.
When I press the button, the horn blows a steady note, and the lips move to form the words.
Will you have a cup of my soul how it's coffee? It's good to the last drop.
Exactly. I'll watch. I'll press the button.
Are you sure you feel all right, Daddy?
I don't understand it. Why, the lips moves and everything.
Can he move as good as he talks, Daddy?
Oh, he'll move all right. I'm certain of that. Now watch him pour the coffee.
I'm watching.
Now, here's the button. There.
Good to the last drop.
Well, there goes 5 months' labor and $1.80 in materials. I guess you think I'm altogether cracked, don't you, Snooks?
No, Daddy.
Thank heaven.
Not altogether.
Oh. Now, listen, I don't care so much about the failure of this thing, but I don't want Mother to find out. Look, if you promise not to tell her, I'll give you this dime.
I don't want the dime, Daddy.
Why, Snooks, what's come over you? You don't want this bright, new, shiny dime?
No, but I'll keep my trap shut for a greasy old dollar.
Oh, you will, eh? Well, you can blab all you like, and here's something to start you off.
Ah, the good old days. Five across the eyes, you. No, I'm kidding. Sort of. You guys back?
Old-fashioned parenting.
Yep. It worked.
Just raised a little welt here and there on the little welt.
Yeah. It'll heal when you're 30, 40, whatever.
Oh.
Yep. I think I'm going to spring for a couple spins of music. What do you think?
Oh, cool.
Let me just reach into the pocket. Insert a coin. What do we got coming up here?
Before I go to sleep, there's a rendezvous I keep, and the dream I always meet helps me forget we're far apart. I don't know exactly when, dear, but I'm sure we'll meet again, dear. And my darling, till we do, you are always in my heart. There's no mountain top so high that somehow love can't climb. No, no. River quite so wide that love can't cross in time. Please believe me when I say, just before I go to sleep, there's a rendezvous I keep, and the dream I always meet helps me forget we're far apart.
I don't know exactly when, dear, but I'm sure we'll meet again, dear. And my darling, till we do, you are always in my
First, we had Kenny Baker, who I swear sounded like the Prince Charming from Snow White.
I wonder if he was that did the song for that. Kenny Baker was with Jack Benny, and he got tired of that role of being his stooge and didn't want to be it anymore. So Dennis Day said, I'll do it. And made a career out of it.
Dennis Day is awesome.
He is.
Yep. And then that was followed up by Guy Lombardo.
Yeah.
With a tune called Bubbles.
I used to make fun of Guy Lombardo a lot, but the more I get into some big band music, his music was just plain fun stuff, you know?
Yep.
There were so many parodies of Guy Lombardo and his Royal Canadians. I think they did one on Second City, didn't they?
I think they did. Yeah.
Second City got everybody sooner or later.
Yep, they were there because that's what they were there to parody television and such. You know, I only one person, one band leader I know that was only one I know that was parodied more than him would have been Lawrence Welk.
Wonderful.
Oh yeah.
Wonderful.
Wonderful.
He was such a wonderful man. Lawrence Welk.
Yep.
Here we are. We are introducing the champagne lady.
Have you ever got
your champagne lady had a little bit too much to drink too. You know, you gotta be careful. Careful her.
There you go. Have you ever gotten off on a warning from like, say, a person of authority?
Oh, once when I was renting, the station was leasing the car for me at one point, and we never got updated tags for it and had, He said, you know, if it weren't for you, had your kids in here, I would have had to tow the car. So he let me off with a warning, and I got it. Got to think, I mean, I didn't even realize they had expired because it was a leased car. It wasn't on my birthday, you know?
Yeah.
Oh.
I've gotten away with worse.
All right.
Come on, sell it.
No, I can't. No, I really can't. I can't. It's bad.
Okay. Erie Radio House first. His memoir revealed.
No.
Oh, that's what he's holding off on. I see. Okay. A tell-all biography. I see.
I don't kiss him or anything else until.
So, Dale, what's happening next week on Erie House Radio?
Not a darn thing. We're going to sit here and just chat. No, it's a show that'll sneak up on you. You might call it a sleeper because we're putting it to bed with Weird Circle, Black Chapel, and Sam Spade. That'll be Friday night at 6:30 Eastern. And then on Saturday, we're going to make our beds one last time with Quiet Please. Quiet Please. And, a little Arch Obler deal with Everything for the Boys.
Yep. I believe it's kind of more of a comedy type thing. So
yep, because it's going to have Ronald Coleman.
Yep, Ronald Coleman, he has a little comedy bit that Arch Obler wrote. But he did. He wrote bits for Edgar Bergen. Matter of fact, Arch Obler wrote that bit, the Adam and Eve bit that got Mae West kicked off of radio for like 40 years, 30 years.
That was cool.
And that was a sketch that was starring Mae West and Don Ameche, nobody got hurt by the show except good old Mae West, who got they were targeting her anyway, but they had got her booted off of radio.
Yep.
Blackballed from radio.
Wonder what she could have said that was so bad.
It was the sketch that was, they didn't like how, you know, because it was like a ministerial association that got after her, and the whole thing, here's an Adam making fun of Adam and Eve and the Bible, and so that was just, again, they were targeting because of her verbal bawdiness. It wasn't even in the movies. It was all verbal. You know, her plays that she did on Broadway. And she went back to doing Broadway, and right? But she wrote so much of what she did. You know,
and she didn't curse. It was all double entendre stuff, you know?
That's all it was. Yeah. Yeah, meet me in my room in 20 minutes and run out there, start without me. You know, come on.
Go into our archives. We did a show on Mae West.
No,
we did way back
when,
I believe.
Men, you know?
And in that show, we also did air that, the Adam and Eve sketch from the Edgar Bergen show that Arch Obler wrote. So, yeah, we'll have to go back and dig through the archives to find that.
Yeah, I think we were still doing talk radio then on Saturday.
That was early then.
Yeah. Because at first we were doing the radio on Friday and talk on Saturday, and then we just exploded with old-timey radio. We're glad you joined us. We'll see you Friday at 6:30, and then switch on over quick to the Twitches and catch the rest of Quotable Horror starring Gar the Ghoul.
Classic Gar the Ghoul.
Classic Gar the Ghoul. Ta-ta.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Can you dig it?
Ow. Got me again. That door.
I'm telling you. You'll be careful, that door.
Mm-mm-mm-mm.
caught the goat too. Put my arm down on it. Oh my.
Oh my
goodness. Very tasty show.
Tasty? Okay. Snacking in between segments or what? What?
Yes. Snacking in between segments.
Yeah. Oh my.
Well.
But Gar. Gar, feel better and get better and everything.
Absolutely.
Yes, heal.
Yeah.
Heal.
I think I'm running out a little bit of steam myself here, so.
So am I. Actually having a little bit of a sugar crash, so I will grab another
case,
snack.
I'm going to call Mr. Durante to the rescue until we all meet again. Mr. Durante, take it away.
Good night. It's time to say good night. Good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the same, and in particular. Good night. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
And now, folks, it's time to say goodnight. We sincerely appreciate your patronage and hope we've succeeded in bringing you an enjoyable evening of entertainment. Please drive home carefully and come back again soon. Good night.
I am home.